Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello, and welcome to another Quarantstream edition of The Cinema Clash. I am your co-host, Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined from a safe social distance of at least 2 miles by Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. And this week, we're going to be talking about the Marie Curie biopic Radioactive, the Jesus Camp coming-of-age dramedy Yes, God, Yes, and the mystery thriller The Rental, among other things. Are you ready, Charlie?
Folks, listeners, Hannah talked me down. She talked me out of it. I was going to give you another musical introduction. Remember, like 2 weeks ago, I gave you the Ennio Morricone to blast us right in there. Get the feel, set the tone, get in the atmosphere. And I was going to do it again. It was the perfect song. Everyone knows Imagine Dragons, Radioactive. It's not the greatest song. I actually don't like that song at all, but it's a perfect transition. She's always saying, just get a good transition. Don't let it fall. And I had the perfect transition. And she's, let's not do the music this week, Charlie.
Just sing it. I said you could just sing it. That was going to be more fun. And then we don't have to worry about somebody like coming after us for royalties or something.
I sang Hamilton the other week and I didn't get any fan mail. So no more singing for you. No more singing. I didn't get any fan mail.
But why did you want to play Radioactive, Charlie?
Because of Amazon Prime Video, which I hope you have, because that means you can go right now and watch Radioactive. But before we hop into plot, I want to talk about film festival scheduling, because Radioactive last fall was at Toronto, huge film festival, usually kicks off awards season. Everyone talks about Toronto. They schedule hundreds of films there over like 2-3 weeks, very long schedule. And Radioactive was the closing night film. Sounds prestigious, but nobody is there closing night. All the press has gone home. Everyone's written up there, whatever it is they're going to write. All the audience is tired of weeks and weeks of films. So even at our little Middleburg Film Festival, which is only like 2.5-3 days long, half the people are gone by the closing film, whatever that is. So it sounds prime. Radioactive. Ooh, Rosamund Pike, closing night film. Well, it's not that prestigious. Rosamund, she was just nominated for a Golden Globe. You saw the movie, A Private Life, right? Is that what that was called?
A Private War.
Mm-hmm. A Private War was denied, was not invited to Toronto. They said, please, Toronto, take our film, A Private War. And they said, no, we're going to focus on these 149 other films, including Radioactive. And the one that she actually was nominated for, A Private War, didn't even make the cut. Hannah.
And A Private War was awesome. I've got to say, that's like one of the most underrated films. And it was about a war correspondent. Definitely worth checking out.
Well, back-to-back biopics for Rosamund Pike. Now she's playing Marie Curie. There have been other films about Curie, but nobody has seen them. Well, okay. Film buffs have seen the 1943 version with Greer Garson and Walter Pidgeon, but nobody else has. This is going to be a lot of people's first introduction to a name they only know from trivia questions, from textbooks. They think, oh yeah, didn't she discover radioactivity and then kill herself with it on accident? Pretty much. But this is going to be a lot of introduction, and it's very brave. I found this to be a very bold film with a statement. I was expecting this boring biopic, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty to be bored about in Radioactive, but I want to lob this to you. Director Marjane Satrapi, Oscar nominated in the past, 2007's Persepolis, love that film, great film. She makes a claim. She says, Hiroshima 1945, Chernobyl 1986 is Marie's fault. Like, she actually puts scenes in there of them dropping an atomic bomb or the nuclear reactor melting down during just intercut edits between Marie Curie staring out the window. And she's saying, this is Marie's fault. Marie did this. This is her fault. What do you think about that take on this?
I don't think she was that damning about it. I think it was more that they were just trying to showcase that there were benefits and consequences to this research. Also, it was adapted from a graphic novel called Radioactive, Marie and Pierre Curie, A Tale of Love and Fallout. So I've never read the book, but I suspect that that's probably interwoven in the book, and they're probably trying to be faithful to that. And that didn't really work for me from a narrative perspective, because I love the first half of this film where Marie Sklodowska Curie, before she's Curie, meets Pierre. And so the first half is really this very nice love story about this this pair that was just passionate about science and was so much better together. Her husband's played by Sam Riley, who was really, really good in this. And unfortunately, Pierre Curie actually died very young in a freak accident with a horse-drawn wagon. And so the second half of the film is really, it just is more about then Marie sort of going on with her research, raising her two daughters, having a scandalous affair with a married man, winning a second Nobel Prize. There's a lot that's just kind of forced into, I felt, the second half of this film. And I loved the first half. I was so into it. I just loved the dynamic. Pierre was very woke for a guy of the 1890s. I was very impressed by their relationship. So to me, it was sort of a tale of two films. And I really enjoyed the first half and kind of lost me a little bit in the second.
Boy, do we disagree about Sam Riley. I like him as an actor. I've seen him in some of these, you know, underground British films like Brighton Rock and Byzantium. I like him just fine as an actor. He plays that crow thing in the Maleficent movies. But here, he actually does what a lot of people do. When they're not thinking about it, they will pronounce Marie Curie's name two different ways. If they're saying it really fast, they're going to say Mary Curie. Mary Curie. And he actually does that. And I notice it. I was like, whoa, throttle back, Sam. That reminds me of when Sofia Coppola was in The Godfather 3, because her father directed it, and she pronounced her own last name three different ways. She says, Corleone. And everyone caught that, and you know, she still gets made fun of for it. And Sam Riley kind of does that here. He pronounces his wife's name two different ways. There's a lot of different kinds of films going on in Radioactive. It is not a standard biopic. Because you know, there's neon going on, even though it takes place in like the early 1900s. You know, she wanted to make radium look like, you know, radium we think it looks like, but it doesn't really look like that. There's themes, motifs of sex discrimination, gender bias, because, you know, she's a woman scientist in a time where there were not women scientists. There's anti-immigrant themes, just like we have in 2020. Well, in early 1900s Paris, they did not like this Polish immigrant, but when she won awards, they did like her. So she was so scandalized by this role she had in this affair. And it's not even her affair. Like, she was designated as the home wrecker. And wait a minute, these are the French. The French they're known for infidelity. How are they getting on her for this? You're the French! Exclamation point, Hannah.
Yeah, but it's still, I don't know. I think it tries to have it both ways where, you know, she's still pining for Pierre, but then she has this fling with a colleague, with one of Pierre's friends, another scientist. But I was a little more okay with it when I actually read a little footnote that the guy that she had the fling with, his grandson ended up marrying one of Marie Curie's granddaughters. I just thought that was a fascinating little tidbit, a granddaughter who actually went on to become like a nuclear physicist. So there, you know, I did go and read more, which is what usually happens to me when I watch one of these biopic type films. I go and look up the whole what's real versus what's not, the Hollywood versus reality kind of thing. And I usually am always interested to discover these little tidbits that just kind of give you this added layer of what you're watching or had just watched in a particular film. And so I really enjoyed discovering that. But yeah, I personally really enjoyed Sam Riley as Pierre. I did not catch whether or not he said her name slightly differently. I think we all do. I'm sitting here going, is it Marie Curie, Mary Curie, Marie Sklodowska Curie? I mean, so, you know, I totally empathize. And I wonder, it's very possible that that her name was merely said slightly differently at different times, depending on what was going on in their lives. I do find it also interesting that Rosamund Pike played another Marie in A Private War. So I think it was Marie Colvin was the character's name. And so I was like, oh, it's another Marie. But people also know her from Gone Girl. I mean, she really, Rosamund Pike, I think is, she makes this movie. And so I don't think the structure of the film does her any favors, but I do think that her performance is still, it's a worthwhile watch. And it just makes me really appreciate the girls and the guys who do the STEM studies, because that was not my, you know, wheelhouse at all. With apologies to Mr. Russo, my high school chemistry teacher, I just, if you had asked me to actually remember what the Curies had discovered, I probably would not have been able to pull out radium and polonium. But now I feel like I'm so much more in the know, and knowing that polonium was actually named after her native Poland. So there's another little trivia tidbit for you.
You can always tell when Hannah reads up on a film. But I don't think Pike makes this movie. I don't think anyone could make this film. They're just in the film because it's so ham-fisted. It's so clunky, especially the dialogue is atrocious. We know this writer recently from his name's Jack Thorne. He just last year wrote The Aeronauts, another opposite sex but far less authentic scientific duo film, actually much worse than this film. Once again, I'm going to get hate mail for saying that, because for some reason people just love them some Aeronauts. I also read up on this film. I don't usually do that, but I had to, because this there's so many holes. There's a lot you do not learn. We are held at arm's length in this film. So I learned the elder daughter won a Nobel Prize. The younger daughter's husband accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on the behalf of UNICEF. And she just died like not too long ago. It was like 8 years ago. And she said, you know, everyone in my family, I'm such a failure. Everyone in my family won a Nobel Prize except me. So that's funny. Yeah. So we are not that far removed from Marie Curie. Her youngest daughter just died. That's crazy.
What? Are you sure it wasn't a granddaughter?
No. We saw her in the film, the little young girl. She died in like 2012.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. But that goes to show you too that this is somebody who obviously deserved to have a little more light shown on her and on her accomplishments. And so that's why Radioactive exists. And it's a tough field, and the film does take science very seriously. It doesn't want you to just, be diverted by the sex scandal and the love story and all of that. It wants you to appreciate that, that both Marie and Pierre essentially gave their lives in studying radioactivity. The lesson I learned was it's probably not a very smart thing to walk around with a vial of, you know, some sort of radioactive material in your pocket.
Don't sleep with it on your pillow.
Yeah. So there's a lesson learned.
Get your teddy bear. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it does point out in terms of the you have the consequential things with the atomic bomb, but you also end with radiation poisoning. But you also have the mobile X-ray units that she helped develop, nuclear energy. Cancer therapies. There are things. It's the yin and the yang of science, and so I think it's valuable for that alone to just realize sometimes, especially now, where science and scientists are so important to helping us understand what's going on, that a movie like Radioactive just serves as a good reminder that science is not easy, and it takes a certain mindset and a certain kind of person to devote their life to it.
And Satrapi is calling out filmgoers. She's calling out the audience. She's saying, hey, every time you see one of these troubled male scientists, these awkward guys, maybe they stutter, maybe they always look at the floor when they talk because they're shy, or they can't talk to women. People say that's okay. They're geniuses. They're mad scientists. Let them go to their laboratory. But when a woman does that, it's not right. Women are not allowed to be mad scientists or troubled geniuses. They still have to be women. And that's a very big theme in this film.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's stop beating that to death. jumping tracks completely from biopic, serious drama, let's go to indie, awkwardness, teenage, hormones. I want to talk about Yes, God, Yes. And actually, that's a great title when you think about it. Yes, God, Yes. It reminded
all caps. All caps, I remind you.
Yes, comma, God, comma, Yes. This reminded me of Boy Erased. If you remember Boy Erased from 2 years ago, Nicole Kidman sent her son to get the gay out of my son camp. And the big theme was the hypocrisy, because all of his teachers at Get the Gay Out of My Son camp were gay. And they
Lucas Hedges. Lucas Hedges, I believe, was in that.
Yeah, one. Very good. Thank you for the reminder. It was and Joel Edgerton. Joel Edgerton was the main character. Yes. Russell Crowe was the dad. And the big thing was fake it till you make it. We know all the boys in the camp could not be cured of homosexuality, so they fake it till you make it. And that theme of fake it till you make it is very resonant, I think, in this much more lighthearted, twee comedy, Yes, God, Yes. It's just as awkward, but now our protagonist is a female, little Natalia Dyer. We know her from Stranger Things. And she's the elder sister of Finn Wolfhard. Love her in Stranger Things. She's so good. Here, she does her best to be awkward. She's very awkward. I believe her as this, I don't know, I think she's about 16, mm-hmm. and she goes to Catholic school, and the pious children try to out pious one another at this Catholic school. And they're like, oh, you haven't been to the retreat. I think you need to go to the retreat. You need a bit more God in your life, because everyone just found out that, she rewinds the sex scene from Titanic, Hannah. She rewinds the sex scene. She wants to see the handprint on the steamed up little Model T window. that's Alice I'm talking about. And that's her major sin. She thinks she might be going to hell because she rewinds the Titanic sex scene. And there's a little message here. Like, look what some of these schools are doing to our children. They think they're going to hell for this. And just as in Boy Erased, the instructors, the authority figures are not as holy as they appear to be. Now, while this setup sounds like my kind of film, man, I think this is awesome. Poking holes in such in institutions that take themselves so seriously, this film didn't meet my expectations.
What were they? I read the log line. Oh, see, I read the log line alone was enough to make me squirm. And I'm like, I don't know who this film is really meant to be for. And I think that's going to be the biggest problem, is that it's an R-rated film. It's more suggestive than graphic, you know, in most ways. It's got a little bit of satire going on, but, you know, it's got these themes about how we're all just trying to figure stuff out, sex, religion, life. But to me, it reminded me, you thought about Boy Erased. I thought immediately of eighth grade. And I was like, oh my, the awkwardness, the horror of reliving eighth grade.
Nothing will ever be as awkward as watching eighth grade.
Except I can't imagine anyone watching Yes, God, Yes, like with their kids in the background, or the kids watching it with their parents anywhere nearby. And that's the only way you can watch a movie these days. And so I don't know. I just think it could be tough. I mean, it goes back. It's like it takes place in the around early 2000, maybe, because she's in an AOL chat room and maybe it was dial up on the server that she stumbles upon this AOL chat that's very racy. And then she just, she learns some things and struggles with what it all means. And so there's a whole thing about discovering what it means to toss someone's salad, and
oh, Hannah,
I couldn't eat.
I thought
you were
just going to allude to that.
I wasn't. I don't know how you, but it's like it's all over this movie. And I'm like, I just want people to be prepared for. I think this film, maybe it's more for like fallen Catholics who just feel some need for validation or vindication of their youth. I don't know. But I just think it's just, It's just a film that is kind of cute, but also makes you squirm. And I just don't know who I would recommend it to. Who would you watch?
It's for me. I love independent film and quirky, awkward little films like that. I loved Eighth Grade. I think it was on my 10 best list.
I liked Eighth Grade too.
This is actually a very long 77 minutes. This is written and directed by Karen Main. I only know her from one other credit. She co-wrote the short film and the story that 2014's Obvious Child was based on. I remember Obvious Child with Jenny Slate.
There's a lot of
crossover here because this is also about a young woman confronting her womanhood for the first time. And even though Jenny Slate in Obvious Child was much older than this, probably a decade older than this, and I did enjoy Obvious Child much more than this, actually. It was a very witty film. It was much more witty than this. This doesn't have those funny lines. This doesn't have those nail it to the screen scenes. I thought that taking it place back in time, I got the time wrong. I thought it was mid 90s, maybe 97 at the latest. So I was off. Apparently this is like 2001, 2002, which I'm not sure that matches up, but that's just me quibbling. It's not that funny. It's not that insightful. It's 77 minutes of, okay, there's nothing else on. That's about as much as I could say about it.
It has a few lines where I did just find myself just kind of chuckling. And the cast is very good. So, you know, it helped that at least you're watching, that it was somewhat entertaining in moments, but on a whole, it just wasn't anything that I could really say, hey, this is something you got to watch. And also the thing that it reminded me of if somebody's trying to figure out what the title, I mean, actually it probably is not that difficult to figure out when it's yes, God, yes, all in caps, but to keep it family friendly, I'll just say, think about a certain scene from When Harry Met Sally, and you'll kind of get a sense of what they're referring to.
You know who this is for? This is for teenagers. I think teenagers should watch this film because anyone over 30, we already learned this lesson. Authority figures, people in charge, they're just as messed up as we are. They just hide it better. They've had better practice. But teenagers don't know that yet. They actually think their teachers and scout leaders and presidents are, you know, they got their crap together. They figured it out. Let me learn from you. It's like, no, wait, let's go ahead and jade you a little bit and make you realize that older people don't have it together either. So you know what? This is for teenagers, Hannah.
Okay. 16 plus, 17 plus perhaps, but
Please, in this day and age, watch it. 15.
I know, but okay, whatever it is, just watch it in your room.
Yeah, don't watch it with your parents. Don't do that to us.
Exactly.
All right, so you made me watch something this week, and you made me watch something this week that's not a genre of yours. It's not really a genre of mine either. It's out of your wheelhouse, so I was kind of surprised you shot it my way, but I went ahead and watched it. But tell our listeners, what did you make me watch this week?
I made you watch a film called The Rental. And it was only 88 minutes. So you think 77 minutes was long for Yes, God, Yes. The Rental was actually a tight 88 minutes. I think it moved pretty well. But it's a horror thriller mystery kind of genre about these two couples, these two brothers and their significant others. They rent this swanky private beach house for a weekend to celebrate some stuff and relax. And they become suspicious that their creepy and maybe racist host is spying on them. And essentially this film starts out like a relationship movie and then suddenly shifts into a gruesome, almost like a teen slasher flick. But I wanted to watch it because it's the directorial debut of Dave Franco. And I was curious to just sort of see how the brother of James would do at the helm. And I think it's very well directed and it's got a really strong cast. But this movie will have anybody rethinking an Airbnb rental and really checking very carefully throughout the home for any kind of hidden recording devices.
The Rental does what horror films are supposed to do. Like Jaws says, don't go in the water. Friday the 13th is Don't Go Camping, and Nightmare on Elm Street is Don't Be a Horny Teenager. This, the rental is Don't Rent Airbnb, because, you know, the owner or whoever, yeah, is going to come by and murder you. Well, first he's going to, like, make you infight and hate each other, then he's going to murder you. I learned that Dave Franco is married to Alison Brie. I did not know that. So he cast his wife in one of the main roles, and I felt it afterwards when I checked, like, who wrote this film? And then I saw it in the credits. It was, so the story and the screenplay are co-written by Joe Swanberg, and like, oh, now I see it. Joe Swanberg is known for these low-budget genre films. Think Drinking Buddies, Happy Christmas, Digging for Fire. These, you know, he's borderline mumblecore, if you folks at home are familiar with that term, mumblecore. Directors really don't like it, by the way, if you associate them with that particular genre. The film looks like it was shot for, you know, whatever you found in your couch cushions over a long weekend. It's got that thing. But so your boy Dan Stevens.
Yes.
Your boy, he's the main guy. But I was so happy to see Sheila Vand. She is from A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is my favorite Iranian vampire movie ever. She's so good. So I was really happy to see her again. I don't see her a lot. And I was like, oh, that's Sheila Vand. And I always love Alison Brie, but no, this isn't the rental. You know, it's for those fans that have to watch every horror film. It's for those people. That's it. It's for nobody else, because it's more a relationship drama than horror. It's make them throw in some infidelity, which you can see coming a mile away, make them squabble, and then you don't wrap it up. You murder everybody, then that'll take care of it. It's lazy. And jump scares, Dave Franco, I thought you already knew this. Jump scares are for the lazy. Jump scares are for directors that don't know how to make suspense. That's who does jump scares, Dave Franco.
It's his first effort. Come on, give the guy a break. I'm not recommending this. The other reason I really wanted to see it is I had just been obsessing in recent weeks about the notion of renting some private house on a beach somewhere for a week or a year or a decade until things got better. And this movie, I'll tell you, I need a new obsession, because maybe a house in the mountains. Cause after watching this, I have no interest whatsoever in trying to find an Airbnb where you don't really know who's running it and who were the last people in it and what other things could be going on. Although I do love the idea of being at some gorgeous private beach house, but I thought the relationship stuff at the beginning, I was intrigued. But then it turns into a very very trite kind of horror slasher movie for the second half. But at least again, 88 minutes. So if you're watching it because you do have some interest in the genre, or you have some interest in figuring out if you like Dave Franco's writing and directing style, then, you know, it's not that long to be with these people. So it's over pretty quick.
Hannah, if we are recommending people watch a film only because they'll get through it because it's short, that's not a recommendation.
No.
It's okay. Even if you don't like it, it's 77 minutes. It's 87 minutes. No, that's not a reason to watch a movie.
Yes, God, Yes was a long 88 minutes or 78 minutes. This, The Rental, is a tight 88 minutes. So there's a difference. Marie Curie movie, Radioactive, was actually a very long 109 minutes.
It's very long.
That one, the second half just dragged for me. So there is a difference. There's something to be said for saying that you're going to invest in checking something out, knowing that the investment is not going to suck all your time away. I would have a much harder time. I still don't understand anybody's inclination to watch The Irishman for 3 hours. I just don't get that.
Don't lowball The Irishman.
Exactly. So you could watch all of these movies back to back to back in the same amount of time that you could have watched that some people would watch Irishman.
The Irishman is a lot better than any of them.
Not for me. To me, that was just yet another mafia mobster movie that I just didn't need to see. Oh. But that aside, none of these are great. These aren't great movies. These are just sort of so-so movies that are coming out at a time where It's just we don't have all that much to choose from if you want to see sort of something new.
If you want to see something new, don't see any of these movies because you've seen them before. Go watch Baseball. Go watch Baseball. There is no best film this week. They're all average to below average, and I don't recommend you go see any of them. I want you to go watch Baseball.
Baseball's always a good option, or even go watch, what's the Tom Hanks movie, you know, go watch A League of Their Own or something. I'm good with watching your favorite, just digging out your favorite baseball movies to watch during the rain delays that will inevitably come at every game during these summer months. But I did want to make a note of one of the other interesting things about the timing of the rental coming out is we also just happened to see that that Dave Franco, so on the heels of the rental coming out, we get the announcement that Dave Franco is going to be starring in a biopic about someone from your era, Charlie.
I was young.
The only thing I remember about Vanilla Ice was just all I can hear is Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, you mean but, Rob Van Winkle? We just saw Rob Van Winkle in The Wrong Missy. Remember when he popped up? I challenge us. I'm all on board. It was all over the tweets. It was all over film news that Dave Franco is going to be Vanilla Ice in the MV Vanilla Ice biopic. And it's like, hey, here's a biopic I can get behind. Marie Curie? Who? What'd she do? Discover something? Give me Vanilla Ice, a guy I grew up with and understand as a human being, the highs and the lows. And they made him look very similar. I challenge us, though. I have a challenge. Vanilla Ice was in a film in 1991 called Cool as Ice. And I want to read you the log line because it's so good. And then I want us to somehow find it and watch it. A rapper gets stuck in a small town and falls for a local girl whose family is in witness protection. Hannah, we have to watch this movie. Oh my God.
I will watch that movie before the biopic called To the Extreme actually comes out. And I read that their intent is to put this disaster artist like spin on his story, which means because we all know how much joy we got out of watching the disaster artist after The Room. I think that this will either be incredibly bizarre and good or not. Those are the two choices.
They have a little, at first you think there's a lot they could put in there, but actually there's not a lot they could put in there. He was famous for a very brief moment in time. There are certain episodes that have to be in there, getting held out the window by Suge Knight being one of them. But if he goes the disaster artist route on this, you know, he'll get the independent film crowd there certainly. And everyone else who's there to learn Vanilla Ice facts, like Marie Curie facts, might be disappointed.
I don't think there's going to be as much to really sink my teeth into on Wikipedia about Vanilla Ice as there was with Marie Curie. But I don't think we have to worry about it anytime soon because who knows really when production will ever, ever truly ramp up again on anything.
Maybe one day you'll actually get to see Top Gun 2.
Top Gun is now slated to come out summer of 2021. They just keep sliding it. But, release dates now, it's just a joke. It's like every big movie just continues to get pushed. And the bottom line is we all just have to wait and see what happens in the world and when things can actually sort of ramp up again and how quickly they're able to turn some of these films around and put them back into theaters. Or if they have to reevaluate yet again, whether it's worth sitting on some of these films that are nearly complete. Or just finding a way to release them. So I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, I can wait.
But hey, Avatar 5 pushed until 2028. So Charlie, mark your calendar now. 2028, I look forward to us discussing Avatar 5. And hopefully by then I will have watched Avatar 1 through 4.
Do you know anybody or any of our listeners out there are even the least bit curious to even line up and watch Avatar 2? I mean, really? No.
Really? That they already have through 5 scheduled is insane to me.
Asking for these. No one's interested in Avatar anymore. I want to see Cool as Ice. That's what I'm interested in.
I want a Top Gun 4 by 2028 before I get an Avatar 5. So we'll see. But that pretty much, I just wanted to point that out. So I don't know, any other final parting words there, Charlie?
Next week is documentary week. A lot of those coming. That's about it.
All right. Well, we will look forward to the docs. And on that note, that will do it for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe and please just wear the mask.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.